tuned in to the Behind the Scenes podcast with your host, Man Robinson, the place where educational, motivational, and inspiration collide with innovation. Be entertained while learning from some of the best actors, directors, and producers in the industry today with self-help tips that you can apply in your career. We don't just talk about it, we be about it.
So, welcome to another episode, Behind the Scenes. I'm your host, Man Robinson. Today we have a very serious, very actual and factual episode, very special because we get to learn two things, something technical in the industry, the film industry, that's what this show is about. But we also get to learn about the ever serious coronavirus that's going on now. We have an actor in the building that's been in the game for years. He started in the movie Notorious. Since then, he's been in I'm gonna hit y'all with it today. Prefala of films. He's currently filming the new season of Family Business. That's what he was filming when he contacted this virus that he does have. He's rephrase that. He's actually recovering from the coronavirus. He was in the hospital, double pneumonia, the whole nine yards. So he's going to take us down what we can expect if we were ever to contact it or somebody in our family was. We know exactly what stages are because he's going to tell us. This is very nice of him to do this. He's a caring guy. I've been knowing him for at least 5 years now, and it's been a cool 5 years, and we worked on multiple projects together. He's an acting coach. He's an actor. He's an inspirator. He's a hard worker, and he doesn't mind spilling the knowledge. The one and only Dennis L.A. White.
Welcome back to Behind the Scenes with Man Robinson. We don't just talk about it, we be about it.
So we are tuned in with our friend, actually, a great actor. He's an acting coach. He's a producer. He's a businessman. He's an innovator, and he's actually has longevity. He started his acting career years ago, and he actually was a musician, an artist before that. So our hot topic today, of course, is Corona, but not only Corona, but the quarantine of Corona and how it impacted our industry. It affected everybody's industry, but in our industry, it affected it in a major way because two things happened. One, of course, it affected financially and people cannot go to work. All the movie sets are shut down. Excuse me. You can't produce movies. You can't do anything except for maybe write or edit or those two things that you could possibly do. Come up with new movies is a pretty good thing. The positive thing about it, if there is any positive, I was taught by my grandparents to always pull some positive out of everything, no matter how bad it is that a digital placement is where it's at. If you have something digital online streaming right now, you at least can still maintain your creativity and maybe not be in financial ruin. So that is also something positive. So the coronavirus is actually, you know, sometimes we think of celebrities like yourself as being untouchable. Bad things don't happen to celebrities. Celebrities don't go to jail. Celebrities don't get sick. And if they do, it's a big deal. You see it on TMZ. But you actually experienced the coronavirus. And can you tell us about it? I mean, if you're feeling up to talking about it.
Yeah. My first question is, how do I get one of those T-shirts, man?
Right here. Let me move right. Yeah. That's a given. I'm so happy you're here. But pretty much anything you ask for is yours right now. So,
thank you. I appreciate it. The unfortunate thing about this coronavirus is that there's no rhyme or reason of how you get it. So I can't really, you know, people ask me how did I get it. I have no idea. I know that this past month, before I was hospitalized, I was really going hard. I was traveling back and forth from LA to Atlanta, filming a movie in Atlanta, shooting a TV series in LA, the Family Business on BET. So I was flying back and forth weekly. Sometimes I'll be in Atlanta for a day or two and then fly to LA for like 3 days and I'm back. And so the week before I really got sick, I flew from Atlanta to LA, then from LA to Charlotte, then took a rental car from Charlotte to Atlanta, and then flew to LA and flew back to Atlanta. And that was all within a week. So my body definitely, you know, was being torn apart. What really helped me out, honestly, is that I hurt my leg on the 5th. Had a screening of a TV series we did, Street Connected, and I hurt my leg afterwards. And so that kind of sat me down, and I was going through a lot of different things. I was having crazy body chills, plus pain in my body. And I started developing, since January, I've had like a little cough, but it got real intense at that moment. And I think the shock to my body with the pain of my leg really, you know, brought on everything else. My temperature was like 103, over 103. And so I kind of just didn't do anything. I kind of, you know, self-quarantined for the week, you know, self-medicated, you know, just trying to, you know, black men are, we don't like to go to the hospital or to the doctor. So I was like, I can, you know, I could be better. But I had to fly back to LA to film a couple more scenes the next Saturday. So it was just getting worse. I lost my appetite. I didn't want to eat anything. It was just, the pain was immense. My coughing was so bad that it felt like Tyson was punching me in my stomach and my chest every time I cough. So I was going through it while I was still trying to handle business and still, you know, not really taking care of myself. So I went to the hospital on the 13th, Friday the 13th, go figure. And they were like, we think we might need to keep you. And I was like, let me think about it. And it was like, nah, we're keeping you.
Yeah.
So shut up.
Yeah.
lay down and let us do what we gotta do. So they x-rayed me, CAT scan, found out I had double pneumonia, and they swabbed me for the coronavirus. The CDC initially wouldn't take my submission for whatever reason. And so the doctor really fought for it. It was like, yo, this kid, you know, something about him, he has it. We think he has it. He has all the symptoms. And he's been flying. I think the thing that made him not want to take it is because I didn't fly to China. You know, that's how the restrictions were. And really them being elitist with the testing of it. So instead of making it available for people who are having symptoms, it was like, well, there's a certain things you got to meet. Are you having these symptoms? Have you flew to China? Like, you know, come on, man. So the doctor was really insistent that they took my test. So they did. So that Monday, the 16th, my mom came by to the hospital to drop some stuff off, and they actually let her into the room with me. She had gloves, mask on. They put the suit on her and everything. And so they called me while I was in the hospital. I was like, yo, congratulations, we got your results back. You are coronavirus negative. You don't have it. Great. I'm like, oh man, that's wonderful. So they took the quarantine sign off my door, told my mom she could take her stuff off. Everything's good. So, you know, she was there chilling, you know, for a while. I had people come through and everything. And later on that night, the doctor came in, was like, we apologize, Mr. White. We had, there was an error in our reporting. And actually, you do have the coronavirus. Mm. I'm like, what the heck? You know, so now I put my family and my yeah, you know, in jeopardy. And so, you know, honestly, when they told me I didn't have it, it was a surprise. Because of all the symptoms I had, and
so,
you know,
so they gave you false information first in a hospital and told you that you were free of. I remember you, we text each other and you told me, you said, no, I don't have it. I'm good. God is good. I remember your words.
Yeah.
But then they came back that night and told you had a deadly situation.
Yeah.
Wow. Crazy.
Yeah. And wow. So, you know, the hospital blamed it on the CDC, you know, that they mixed up the paperwork or whatever the case may be. So with me at that moment, I mean, it was a surprise that I didn't have it because of everything I was going through. But now it's a extra burden because now I contaminated my family.
And they're fine.
They're fine. Yeah. Thank
that's
God.
Good. Yeah. That's
whatever reason they didn't catch it. As we know, you know, they wouldn't offer any tests for them. They just told them to self quarantine for 2 weeks, which is also crazy, you know.
But you did it though. You self quarantined yourself before you even went to the hospital.
Yeah,
so that was like a natural thing to you. You just kind of stayed home and kind of, you know, that's what we do. We just kind of, you know, wait till the stuff go away.
I didn't go nowhere. Yeah. I was, you know, my family wasn't even. They kept me. They stayed away from me, you know, on purpose. And so, so that week during the hospital, you know, I was getting IVs and antibiotics and oxygen and, you know, really, they really brought me back to health. And so they released me and, with a 14-day quarantine still. So I have like maybe 5 more days left, with this quarantine just to be safe. So, you know, it's the CDC, one of the reps has been calling me and my family trying to, you know, check on us, but because they know they messed up.
Yeah, definitely.
And now it's time for Man Robinson's motivational thought. Black movie star, motivational and inspirational. Black movie star.
So everybody know I do what we call motivated thought, which is Black movie star. Black movie star, again, is not someone that has to be super famous or driving around in Lamborghinis and Bugattis and all that. This is somebody that works hard in the craft. And they're always, at this point, first season, are always picked by me. Somebody that I've been thinking about my whole career, and probably 9 times out of 10, I look up to them and I'm inspired by them, because remember, this show is inspirational, inspired by the inspirational. So today's Black movie star is Martin Lawrence. I always give a reason why. Martin Lawrence. Martin Lawrence is officially my Black movie star not because he just did Bad Boys and broke type of records. It's not because he had one of the funniest scenes in Bad Boys 2. It's not any of that. It's because I went on a Martin marathon recently and I realized how much hard work this young man put in. Now, if you look at a season, the seasons are 8 episodes, 13 episodes. I looked and his seasons were 22, 23, 24 episodes per season, 6 seasons. That dude is the GOAT. He's from all these different movies that he started in. And I mean, Martin Lawrence is my Black movie star. You dig? Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Behind the Scenes with Man Robinson. We don't just talk about it, we be about it.
That's rough, man. You still look as fly as ever, though. You don't.
Whatever, man.
You still look strong. You still talking intelligent. So it didn't really. But you know what the people don't know, and even myself, is all we're hearing is that people are passing away, and we're hearing that people in the hospital and they're quarantined. We don't know what they're going through. Like, what does it feel like? Like, why are they passing away? Is it a disease that's eating them away? Or I think I did hear a rumor that they're suffocating. Like, do you have any idea what goes on?
So what happens is when you get the coronavirus, it attacks your immune system and your respiratory, your breathing. So if you have asthma, any heart disease, high blood pressure, it intensifies it. So, you know, with me, I had pneumonia. I guess I had a walking pneumonia, you know, so it intensified that. So people are passing away because they can't get the oxygen. You know, as we know, oxygen is life. So they can't get the oxygen enough oxygen to breathe properly. So they were pumping me with oxygen while I was in the hospital, you know. God bless, I was healthy. I didn't have any diseases or asthma, nothing like that. But they were pumping me with oxygen. So it closes your, it when you get the coronavirus, it eats away the inside of your lungs.
Wow. So that explains why the big subject was about ventilators. We didn't understand. We didn't understand what was the ventilator, why, you know, the president himself was, you know, all these ventilators were being ordered. And he was trying to stop. He said it was too many. But I guess that you're saying that that's what the problem is.
You can't breathe. And even now that I'm home, I have an issue with breathing. Like, I can't, me walking around the crib and doing certain things, I get winded. You know, wow. So I got to build my lungs back up. But if people are in, or if people haven't really went to the hospital in early enough, you know, their lungs are deteriorating. And so I feel like if I had waited a couple more days, I might not have, you know, came out on the other side. And the main reason why I went to emergency room on that Friday is because I was supposed to fly out that Saturday to film in LA. So I was like, yo, man, let me go to the hospital, you know, let them check me out so I can get on this flight. Even though everybody around me was like, fool, you stupid. You're not getting on no flight. You see how bad you coughing? I'm like, whatever, yo, I'll just hold my cough down. You know what I'm saying? I'm thinking, yeah. I'm trying to get this bread. I'm thinking about work and everything. But if I had waited, you know, I was blessed to go into the hospital at the right moment, the window before it became a pandemic. So they had rooms and ventilators and beds available for me when I got there. So once that, you know, they moved me to a room, once they really confirmed that I had it, they moved me to another floor. I guess that was their new coronavirus floor or whatever. And so it was intense. So that's really the problem, is the breathing.
Wow. So, but you were in recovery. So like, how does that though, like the day of recovery, was it like, okay, now I can breathe on my own? Is that considered recovery or?
Well, what they were doing was they were lowering my oxygen level.
Okay.
And checking. I mean, I was getting checked like every couple hours of my, you know, my temperature, my blood pressure, my oxygen level. I had a machine that I was holding constantly that checked my oxygen level, but I had oxygen in my nose. So they were like weaning me off oxygen. But there was moments like in the hospital where laying down, going to sleep, it was crazy. I couldn't breathe. I couldn't, and we don't really think about the importance of oxygen. So I'll try and go to sleep, but I couldn't breathe. And so it became really challenging for me to go to sleep. It was crazy. So they would increase my oxygen level and then they started decreasing it. And then once, you know, they were like, well, we think you're going to go home tomorrow, but my oxygen level wasn't right. So they had to keep me. So once they felt that my oxygen level was good for me to not be on any oxygen, then they released me.
So that's considered recovery. And that's,
yeah,
I think it was, you know, I'm reading my notes here. I think it's 160,000 people have been recovered so far in recovery. Yeah. So with that, do they have like a set where you have to get retested? Or, I mean, how does
that
work?
That's what they don't know. So I have an appointment, a pulmonary doctor to check my lungs and everything to see how I am. And I'm hopefully they're going to give me another test to make sure that, you know, I don't have it anymore. But the crazy thing about it is, you know, people have it and have no symptoms. Yeah. So you can have it for like 14 days and have no symptoms and pass it to someone else and they get sick.
So that's why they want a no the distance. They want everybody to be a distance so you can't pass it on. Yeah. I mean, it seems weird. You know, we watch all these movies like Outbreak and The Fifth Wave, which I was in The Fifth Wave, by the way.
Okay.
And I was quarantined in the movie. It was, you know, I found the pictures on my phone and I'm looking at the pictures like, whoa, this is what's happening right now.
Yeah.
But that's what considerably could stop the spread of the virus. So I'm glad you're here, man. I know you. I know that you are spiritual and I know that you are a hard worker and what we call a hustler. So I know you are affected and I know that you, and correct me if I'm wrong, that you're coming out of this changed in both ways. More spiritual.
It definitely gives you a different viewpoint on life, you know, and every day I see people that are passing away or people are contacting me telling me that they have family members. And only reason why I even did the video of me in the hospital is because I was hearing so many false reports and people making fun of it. And, you know, somebody even was like, yo, black people can't get it.
Right.
You know,
right.
It was like a lot of dumb stuff. And I was like, let me put this out there so people know that it's tangible and it's someone that you know. And the amount of love that has been shown has been enormous. People calling me, texting me, commenting, DMing me. It's been amazing. People that I didn't know, I don't know. People that, you know, I've never met. Celebrities, regular people, but they're like, we've been praying for you, and that goes a long way.
Well, that's when I seen your video, I was like, okay, this is an opportunity to teach people, because people do not know all those things I've heard too. Black people can't get it. We have something inside of us, and you know, it's a joke. The government made it up. All these different things.
Yeah.
But when I seen a friend of mine, I said, well, this is an opportunity to teach the public. Yeah. And I know you're a hard worker, and I know that, you know, you have businesses going on now. I have something going on with you.
Yeah.
You're the producer on one of the films we're working on now, and you have the TV series that you were talking about. How do you look at the other side of it, though? Like, people, they're losing their jobs right now. People losing their jobs, they can't go to work. How do you, the whole podcast that we're doing now is meant to be a self-help. And we want the audience to actually learn something as well. So how do you suggest that somebody, either actor or filmmaker of any sort, still manage through this process?
Well, I know for me, like the first day I came home on a Saturday. That Monday, I was at the bank cashing checks. Like, yo, what's up? I got to get this bread. Yo, I need some liquid cash.
Yeah.
But I think during this time, is a recalibration of your talents and your arts, and a chance to create and to put your whole career in focus. Because, you know, with everything going, when everything is normal, it's a rat race. We're trying to keep up. We're trying to find the next project. We're trying to find the next casting. We're trying to find the next check, and we're just running and scrambling all over the place. And not having the time to sit back and say, let me formulate a plan of how I'm going to move forward and how to be in a situation where when there is a pandemic going on, I'm good. You know what I mean? I could be better, but I'm good. I'm blessed.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not worried about my lights being cut off. I'm not worried about if I have enough money to buy food. I'm not worried about those things. My phone bills are paid. My you know, mortgage is paid. So that's, you know, this is the time for you to focus on your career and say, what do I need to do to have multiple streams of income? Get money in seven ways. Yeah, get money in seven, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Multiple streams of income, and to really set my career on a whole different path. So now is the creating time. So it's like that moment when runners are, you know, in the Olympics, and that moment before the gun, is shot off, what they go through, their whole process. This is that process right now. So if you're an actor, start learning some monologues. Start practicing your self-tape. So when it's time, when things are back to normal, you have a process of, you know how to self-tape like it's effortlessly. If you're a writer, write. If you're a producer, create content. Get, you know, start reaching out to other creators and innovators and build your team. So it's like, all right, well, look, I don't know how long this quarantine stuff is gonna last, but I know in July we should be good. So let's shoot a short in July. Let's do this. Start planning. Now you have time to really plan because you ain't got nothing else to do. So don't let this opportunity to build, you know, pretty much pre-production of your life. Don't miss out on a pre-production of your life. Is you know, and if you're doing a film, you want 30 days of pre-production. If you have 60 days of pre-production, that's even better. But don't have this whole time pass you by, and you have a week of pre-production for your life.
Wow, that's so here. So I have on this show, I have what I call my tips. And based on whatever the trending topic may be at that time, that's how the tips are generated. But this show is for filmmakers, actors, upcoming actors, and people that want to be in the film industry. So my tip for today would be get digital. So if you see all the physical jobs, they stopped. They're all stopped. We can't hold a camera. We can't go on the field. So you have to not, if you have something, like you're saying, catch up with stuff that you have. If you have it, get it up digital. That's a way that you can have the audiences are able to see it now, even in the quarantine. Digital has proved to be king right now. So when this quarantine is over with, let's say July, you actually, if you're smart and you listen to the words of Mr. White here, you actually be in a better place once quarantine over with, because now you have things written, you have a plan, and now, okay, the world is open back up. Let's get to where we need to get to. But you keep in mind, thoughts for myself, is that this can happen at any time. So now you build that as a permanent way of shift for the rest of your life. That was my tip of the day. So you touched on it. One thing, I know that you are a acting coach, right? And you have a lot of success. I think I know at least personally four people of yours that your students that actually went on and got hired acting jobs. It may be more, but I know of four myself.
Yeah.
And you mentioned the word monologue and self taping.
Yeah.
Some of the audience might not know what that is. You mind touching on that? What is a monologue and a self tape?
So monologue is a scene in which it's just one person speaking. And so what that does, it helps you build your memory and being able to tell the story. So, you know, you can go online and find monologues and Google it and find one that fits you. Whether it's from a play or it's from, you know, scenes from TV shows, you know, like Scandal, stuff like that. Self-tape is where we at nowadays in the industry, where you used to go in person and audition. And sometimes we do that still, but a lot of the times you have to, you know, tape at your house and submit the tape and to the casting director. You know, I booked a lot of stuff just off self-tape where I never met the casting director, never met the producers until I was on set. Parenthood TV show, I was on several seasons. I booked that off self-tape. And they booked my homeboys that were like extras in my self-tape, and paid them, flew them out, gave them, you know, made them SAG eligible. The TV series Atlanta, you know, I booked, you know, I did two episodes with them strictly from self-tape. So with self-tape, you know, as an actor, you know, it's a process. There's certain criteria. You have to have a reader, off camera. You have to have good lighting. You have to have good sound. So those are the three criteria pretty much. So natural light is great. But and your background has to be clear. I mean, you don't want to have like your baby pictures in the background, bottles, Hennessy, you know. Yeah. You want to have a clear, so only thing they can focus on is you and your performance. And so when you go to, you know, when you get a C-mail and you submit it, it should look professional. So as an actor, you should practice that and really study on that and during this time. So you have a, you know how long it takes for you to record a video, to download it and submit it.
Well, I think that, you know, my experience, sometimes I play casting director on different films. And if we didn't ever send the lines over, or what they call sides over, to, you know, the potential person that's audition, then the first thing we would ask them is, do you have a monologue? And I would say probably 50% of people had no idea what that was and how important it is. It's a very important tool when you want to become an actor. You know, it's very important because it shows the casting director what you can do, you know, well-known scenes. So is there any other things that, like, right now, I would say, I agree with you, right now is the perfect time to hone your skills. You got the internet, you can go on the internet, you can find different monologues, like you were saying earlier, or different scenes and try to play those scenes out to yourself. So you're ready.
Well, here's the thing about monologues. Mm-hmm. Me personally, I haven't needed to use a monologue in well over 10 years, right? Ooh. I have like 3 or 4 monologues on deck anytime. I can spit them like it's nothing. But I haven't had to use it in like well over 10 years.
Why is that?
Because the projects that I auditioned for are, you know, there's size, there's part, you know, the scripts available. Mm-hmm. So that's what I work on. If I go to an audition and it's a cold reading, meaning you get the script there, you know, I'm good enough to maintain that script and, you know, convey it instead of having to do a monologue, you know. And I haven't really done theater in a long time. So sometimes in theater, they want you to do a monologue. But other than that, I haven't had the use of it. But as a new actor, when I first got in the game, I definitely, you know, had to use my monologue for certain things. Mm-hmm. And I booked roles based off my monologue. But it was in New York doing theater, independent projects, you know, sometimes, you know, even trying to get an agent, I had to use that. But where I am in my career, like I said, like the past 10 years, I haven't had to use my monologue at all.
Yeah, you have a very successful last 10 years. I think you were on Atlanta. You were on the show Now. What's the name of the show Now you're doing? You're currently filming the show that you were
filming. Yeah, The Family Business on BET, season 2.
Yeah, and it was something else as well. You had another filming that you were doing. I mean, you're always working. You know, that's one thing about you. You're always traveling and working. You were in one of my films. You were in actually two. One that's released, Turnt. You were in Turnt. Yeah. You were in Power Corrupts. And we're working on A Love to Die For now. And you actually coming on as producer and one of the characters in that as well. So you are very successful and very hard worker, man. And we appreciate you coming, blessing the audience. And, you know, the one thing about you, though, that I do want the audience to know, that you are just as good as actor as you are a director and a producer. I've seen you put stuff together without even just by the time the phone was hung up. Okay, we're ready. So from location.
Man, that's that MacGyver in me.
But, you know, that's what you have to have is if you're a filmmaker, I think you should be touched on all categories, and you are definitely a proof of that. So
it's a work in progress. It's a work in progress. I'm trying to get better at everything at all points. I'm never satisfied with my performance on anything that I've done. Yeah. I want to get better. And so, you know, you got to want to strive for greatness.
Well, definitely. Like I said, I think I went out to American Black Film Festival, and me and you went different times, but we ended up there together, and your company was a company of respect. They have to respect you to be in that company. And your company was, I mean, if you, when I seen Amari Harvick, what's his name, Lorenz Tate, his brothers, and a few other people, and you were moving around with these gentlemen as like they're your family. And I think that you said that they reached out to you during the quarantine with the Corona incident.
Yeah, man. I mean, the amount of people, Omari Hardwick, Omar Dorsey, Kenny Lattimore called me last night. Lady Rage called me about an hour ago. Kiki Shepherd, Kimberly Elise. I don't even know. I don't remember even meeting her. She reached out. I mean, it's just been a plethora of people that's been hitting me up, contacting me, showing me love. Because, you know, I feel that I'm a stand-up guy, and I've been in this industry long enough, and I bring my A game every time I'm on set, every time I film with people. And when you get what you get when you rock with me, I don't have no hidden agendas. My love is for my family and for my art. And I think that permeates through, you know, how I walk, and people respect that.
Yeah, I definitely can approve that message, because I know for sure you are definitely stand up, a hard worker, and a motivator, innovator, and you're very educational, as this show states. So you also have an acting class. Could you tell people where to find your acting class and the name of it?
Yeah, so during this quarantine time, I know you need classes to get ready. So you can go to actlikeyouknow.org, and I do private coaching. So you can secure a session, two sessions, four sessions, and we do it through Skype or FaceTime. And it's really, you know, designed to make sure that you are the best actor that you can be, with giving you tips on how to find jobs, how to improve your auditioning skills, how to master roles, and how to build your whole profile as an actor. So go to actlikeyouknow.org for all the information, and let's get rocking.
Yeah, I actually approve that message as well. So Act Like You Know, we'll actually put a label at the bottom of this video of the website you can go to if you want to join his class and do one-on-one. Dennis, I also have random thoughts during this program. And today my random thought is, I believe that our seat of the president, and I'm not just saying the person, the seat of the president, to me, and this is just a random thought, should be two seats. Shouldn't be a vice president. It should be two seats. It should be two presidents. One person cannot man the nation. And the reason being is the nation is split. The nation is split between wealthy and anything under that. So there should be a representation of the second half, whether it's middle class or below, and then the higher wealthy or whatever you want to call them have their representation. Because the way things are going right now, I don't believe that that seat can say or feel the right things that need it for this side. That's just my opinion, random thought. You can add on it if you like.
Well, I feel that the way that America is set up, that's going to be really hard to do. But also the way that America is set up is that we look towards leaders and we look for someone to follow and someone to lead our nation instead of looking internally. You know, as a people, we're stronger, underlining this community. You know, and I always say it's the W.E.B. Du Bois and the Booker T. Washington split. So Du Bois wanted us to integrate, wanted us to go to school with the rich white people, want us to be the only black doctor in a white hospital, where Booker T was like, man, forget them. Let's build our own. We good at crops and farming. Let's control that. Let's have our own schools. And so that split our people were thinking, because we always want to be accepted in the other society instead of saying, let's build our own society. I've come from a military background, so, you know, I live near military bases, and I've seen people from Thailand, different countries, they come and they build a whole community within themselves. So one person does, you know, laundry. They take all their laundry to that one person. One person has a restaurant. They all eat at that person's restaurant. So they all are circulating money into their own community. And then 5-10 years down the road, they own 30 businesses that they all support. But we don't do that.
Mm-hmm.
We like, man, I'm not supporting Mike. I'm gonna support Jimmy, you know what I'm saying? Because it makes me look good to be at their restaurant instead of supporting the brothers. So that's what we have to do as a people. We need to have our own entity. So we're not, whatever they do in the White House, whatever, we can't control that. We need control. We can do what we do in our house. And I think that's the only way we're gonna be able to survive what's going on, because it's a war on us. It's a war.
Well, I think that you are Medgar Evers actually came with that same way of thinking, and he actually was murdered for that in the 60s, and I believe that's true as well, and that's what they do, and this is not a black and white podcast, but that's what they do. So you're right, and you know, our random thought today was addressed and mentioned. Actually recorded by the great Dennis L.A. White. And we appreciate you, all your thoughts, all your knowledge for coming onto the show. God bless you. And hopefully the audience gain information about the virus, about what to do during the quarantine, and also how to support black businesses. So thank you very much. And we are out. God bless you, brother.
Thanks.
Thanks for tuning in to Behind the Scenes with Man Robinson. Our aim is to genuinely encourage and inspire you with the compelling stories and content we provide, in hopes that you'll inspire others. For info on upcoming episodes and all things surrounding film, techniques, and motivation, follow at Man Robinson on all social platforms. View on blackfilm.com, manrobinson.org, or stream anytime on Spotify and iTunes.